Universität Hamburg.
The topic of my talk is a Pulitzer for Tolkien, Once Removed, Juno Diaz's The Brief Wondrous Life of Oscar Wilde, and Fantasy as Literary Intertext. In Juno Diaz's 2007 novel, The Brief Wondrous Life of Oscar Wilde, which won the Pulitzer Prize in 2008, one of the most remarkable elements is the way in which... I could, but then we'll go 25 minutes.
That's probably the length of your paper, but I'm deaf and I can't follow, and lots of people don't speak English as a first language.
Okay, I'll give it a shot. One of the most remarkable elements is the way in which the narrative is suffused in literary intertexts from the wide genre of fantasy. In my talk today, I want to emphasize one of these intertexts in particular, J.R.R. Tolkien's The Lord of the Rings. I want to show that Tolkien's narrative is more than just one more of the many similes and metaphors which Diaz adapts from fantasy and science fiction literature. The sustained allusions to Tolkien, which are the only such sustained metaphorical system in the whole novel, enable the novel's progression from an initially entirely metaphorical use of fantasy to a truly fantastic moment, and opens the possibility that the reality of the Dominican Republic, as Diaz sees it, is even more fantasy-like than Tolkien's book. Diaz's use of Tolkien skillfully privileges the fantasy reader in the interpretation of Diaz's novel and suggests that it is the diegetic readers of fantasy who best understand the history of the Dominican Republic which Diaz draws. At the same time, it ends up affirming the insufficiency of fantasy's imagination in the face of the hideous realities of Dominican history, insisting on the lack of the imaginary of Western fantasy at the same time as it uses fantasy literature to better describe the reality of the Dominican Republic. In this ambivalence, Diaz complicates the distinctions between reality, fantasy, and the fantastic, and makes Tolkien the center of a far-reaching reinterpretation of Dominican history, a reinterpretation in which fantasy intertexts are necessary to accurately render Caribbean reality. And while doing so, Diaz's book cleverly echoes the structure of Tolkien's magnum opus. I did say that the distinctions between reality, fantasy, and fantastic are clear, but that may be saying a bit much. And I'm following Uwe Durst, who's happily here but not in here, which is as happy, in my conception of these terms. Very briefly, and I'm really aware that I'm doing the theory a disservice, it helps to understand these terms as basically three points on a sliding scale defined by the diegetic system of reality of the text. That is to say, a realistic text corresponds largely to our expectations of cause and effect relationships. That's to say, again, a cigarette doesn't light itself. It is lighted by a regular process of identifiable steps, even if these are not explicitly spelled out. By contrast, a system of reality corresponding to fantasy, which in Durst's terms is marvelous, the German term is wundervoll, I'm just translating that freely, that diverges from this convention, but without especially marking the divergence. That is, diegetically, the events are presented as natural, but there is not all of those intermediate steps. It's basically magic that lights the cigarette in this case. And between those points on the spectrum is the fantastic moment, where the reader or the characters or the narrator doesn't decide or can't decide which of these forms it is. It's not told whether it's real or marvelous, as it were. Diaz's book touches on all three of these states, and the journey of progression to fantasy is structured by the Tolkien references. The reader becomes conditioned to accept metaphors, allusions, and allegories from Tolkien, whose books operate in a fantasy reality already, and thus find themselves prepared to accept the shift away from a realistic reading to a marvelous one. Diaz's novel is the history of the Dominican-American family Cabral, especially Belisha Cabral and her son Oscar, largely narrated by a friend of Oscar's, Junior, with two chapters narrated by Oscar's sister Lola. It's set partially in Belisha's childhood and under the care of her aunt La Inca in the Dominican Republic, and a little before in more ancient family history, during the reign of Rafael Trujillo, and partially in Oscar's school and university days. Strikingly, the novel starts out wholly affirmative of the marvelous and immediately ties that marvelous reality system to Tolkien. In a 7-page preface to the novel, Diaz outlines the existence of Foucault, the, quote, curse of the New World. Foucault, Diaz avers, is, quote, like Morgoth's bane, and Rafael Trujillo is, quote, our Sauron. Here, there is no doubt that the Dominican Republic is a marvelous realm, because the existence of Foucault and its mysterious workings are described as fact, not as metaphor. But after the preface, the novel drops back into a realistic mode. For a long while, nothing occurs which violates the realistic norms. It no longer references Tolkien either, except for a note that Oscar could speak Elvish. Only when the novel begins to narrate the history of the Cabral family in the Dominican Republic does Diaz return to talking. It quickly becomes clear that Diaz privileges the fantasy reader in his use of talking. Belisha Cabral's aunt, in attempting to shield her niece from the grasp of the dictator Trujillo, possesses, quote, a guardedness so Minas Tirith in La Pequeña that you'd need the whole of Mordor to overcome, unquote. He constructs here a multilingual pun because Minas Tirith is Sindarin Elvish, Tolkien's language, for the Tower of Guard, so the guardedness, as well as an intertextual one. If the Gondorian Minas Tirith of the Lord of the Rings did not actually fall, even though threatened by the whole of Mordor, the Elvish Minas Tirith of the Silmarillion was easily overcome, and also by Sauron. But Diaz complicates the system of references even more. Later in the novel, he notes that Trujillo, quote, dominated Santo Domingo like it was his own very private Mordor, unquote. Just as La Inca's protection of her niece is couched in Tolkien analogies, so is the very reason Trujillo is after Belisha. Belisha discovers that she incites the sexual desires of the customers of the shop she works at, a discovery, quote, like the accidental discovery of the One Ring, unquote, the object which Sauron pursues in The Lord of the Rings. As the narrative progresses, Junior's narration increasingly ties elements of Tolkien's universe into the historic reality of the Dominican Republic. Trujillo's ring subordinates become, quote, ring wraiths, Chief Nazgul, the Witch King of Anmar. Belisha's lover, a minor minion of Trujillo's, is, quote, no ring wraith, but no orc either, unquote. When Belisha's relationship breaks down and she is faced with the danger of being killed, her aunt, quote, knew that when Gondolin falls, you don't wait around for the Balrogs to tap on your door, unquote. And, quote, like Galadriel after the temptation of the ring, La Inca, who, with the elvish ring of her will, had forged within her home her own personal Lothlorien, began to diminish, unquote. Several things become apparent here. As in the preface, genre knowledge helps the reader unravel the question of what each of Diaz's metaphors mean. But in the preface, Trujillo was not just our Sauron, but also, quote, our Aron, our Darkseid, our once and future king, unquote. A series of metaphors in which each individual reference did not matter so much as the general sense. Even then, genre knowledge helped. While Diaz avers that no one knew whether the curse of Fuku was Trujillo's servant or his master, the relationship between Morgoth Fuku, after all, between Morgoth, and that's an inset, Fuku, after all, was like, quote, Morgoth's bane, and Sauron is clear. So the relationship between Morgoth and Sauron becomes clear if you know what the relationship between, the other way around, the relationship between Fuku and Trujillo becomes clear when you know what the relationship between Morgoth and Sauron was. Knowledge of Tolkien then helps readers to better understand the reality which Junior's narration depicts. This remains the case in a different form in the analogies he draws between Trujillo's henchmen and the Tolkien characters. Junior describes Trujillo's main subordinates as, quote, the regime's three witch kings. Tolkien readers will know, however, that this complicates the analogy because there is only one witch king in Tolkien. Junior describes another man as, quote, one of Trujillo's beloved Morgul lords, quote. But the Lord of Minas Morgul in Tolkien is synonymous with the witch king. There is only one of them, either. While the Tolkien metaphors work on a superficial level, they expose their insufficiency to the fantasy reader. Fantasy's desire to establish a hierarchy of evil, which is manifest in Tolkien, breaks down when confronted with the reality of the Caribbean. But more than that breaks down because Diaz, by now unexpectedly, interweaves his Tolkien metaphors with a number of fantastic events. Belisha believes, quote, that a man sitting in a rocking chair in front of the hovel she's driving past had no face, and that face is in emphasizing italics, an emphasis which highlights the unexpectedness and the unreality of the event, and thus marks it as fantastic. La Inca feels that, quote, a hand reached out for her, and she remembered who she was. You must save her, her husband's spirit said, or no one else will. And finally, Belisha, beaten by the thugs of her lover's wife, encounters the mongoose, with a capital M. A vision in the shape of a mongoose appears to her, reawakening her spirit of resistance and leading her out of the cane field onto a road, the cane field where she was beaten in. Here, Junior's narration makes explicit the fantastic, that is to say, the undetermined ontological nature of the event. Quote, whether what follows was a figment of the belly's racked imagination or something else altogether, I cannot say, unquote. But a footnote betrays the fact that we have come back to the preface's marvelous reality. Here, in that footnote, Junior unambivalently reaffirms the mongoose's existence. At the end of the episode, he even suggests that, quote, It's all true. Through the numinous power of prayer, La Inca saved the girl's life, laid a counterspell on the Cabral family, Fuku. The mongoose appears 3 more times in the novel, always to Oscar from now on. In the most striking image of the novel, Oscar himself being driven to his death in a cane field, quote, imagine that he saw his whole family getting on a wawa, even his poor dead abuelo and his poor dead abuela, and who is driving the bus but the capitalized mongoose, and who is the cobrador but the capitalized man without a face, but it was nothing but a final fantasy. Wawa is one of the rinky-dink buses that apparently they're using, and the cobrador is the guy who takes the tickets. Doesn't really matter, but there you go. The true meaning of fantasy here has been shifted by the mass of Tolkien references in the novel up to this point. In the later parts of the novel, the relationship between Trujillo and Sauron gains much power. Trujillo dominates Santo Domingo, quote, like it was his own private Mordor, and his eye, with a capital E, was everywhere. And at long last, Trujillo himself becomes marvelous fantasy. Belisha's father has been killed by the Trujillo regime. His writings have vanished. But why? Because, quote, the kind of book Abelard, that's Belisha's father, was writing, if we are to believe the whispers, was an expose of the supernatural roots of the Trujillo regime, a book about the dark powers of the president, a book in which Abelard argued that the tales the common people told about the president, that he was supernatural, that he was not human, may in some ways have been true. That it was possible that Trujillo was, if not in fact, then in principle, a creature from another world, unquote. Again, Junior hedges his bets. It's only a story. But Junior has, by now, put so many fantasy metaphors and fantastic and marvelous events side by side with this final revelation that his caution, quote, no solid evidence, the kind of shit only a nerd could love, becomes a backhanded affirmation. It is possible to argue even further. Although Trujillo's control over the Dominican Republic is likened to Sauron's over Mordor, and consequently, the entire population of the Dominican Republic is superficially placed in the same metaphorical relationship with Trujillo as the Cabrals, the Cabral family's privileged role in the tighter narrative web is subtly emphasized. In sharing the metaphorical Middle Earth with Trujillo, the Cabral family recognizably becomes part of the unfolding story into which Trujillo interferes as part of his general interference in Dominican lives, not just of their own, but of Dominican history in total. The fates of the members of the Cabral family are deeply intertwined with Trujillo through an allegory taken from a marvelous system of reality and more. The marvelous metaphor becomes linked to a fantastic, because still nominally ambivalent, reading of Dominican history when Junior suggests that Trujillo's origins are supernatural. Certainly, Belisha's sexual growth is linked with the image of the One Ring for superficially simple reasons to allude to their allure for Trujillo. But the suggestion of Trujillo's marvelous history necessitates a reappraisal of this mere superficial reading as well. The One Ring was certainly an item of great temptation for Sauron in The Lord of the Rings. His seeking for it propelled the plot, and his obtaining of it would have meant the end of freedom in Middle-earth. Yet at the same time, the One Ring was his creation and his downfall. In a sense, Belisha herself is a creation of Trujillo's, the consequence of the dictator's single-minded destruction of any kind of opposition and therefore her family. Belisha's exile comes on the night of Trujillo's death, and like the loss of the One Ring, which occurred at the time of Sauron's first death, becomes the first event in a chain that eventually leads to Trujillo's absolute downfall. And this fall is not physical, but needs to be understood in terms of the energy expended by the Trujillo regime to suppress the revelation of Trujillo's supernatural origins, as suggested by Junior. By living a family history that in the final reckoning reveals the secret of Trujillo's regime and his supernatural nature, despite the regime's best efforts to suppress it, the Cabral family history thus echoes the plot of The Lord of the Rings. In other words, it is possible to read The Brief Wondrous Life of Oscar Wilde as the very book which depicts Trujillo's supernatural origins, the, quote, lost final book of Dr. Abelard Lewis Cabral. Again, in turn, a nod towards the Tolkienian conceit that The Lord of the Rings itself is just a translation of the Red Book of Westmarch, which was Tolkien's claim. But by accepting the supernatural origins and with it the marvelous nature of the Trujillo regime, the connection offered between the marvelous nature of Middle-earth and the marvelous nature of the Dominican Republic becomes more direct than ever, in that fantasy, an apparently escapist and nerdy genre, ends up being a perfectly valid descriptive tool rather than merely allegorical or even just metaphorical. The marvelous reality of The Lord of the Rings becomes no more fantasy than the marvelous reality of the Caribbean. While the novel privileges fantasy, however, it does not grant it absolute interpretational power, although it constantly foregrounds the applicability of fantasy tropes in description of the marvelous reality of the Dominican Republic, it complicates them with a similar constancy. Trujillo is Sauron, but not quite. His henchmen are ringwraiths, but not like those in Tolkien. The Dominican Republic is Mordor, but worse. Western fantasy cannot come to terms with what is actually going on in the Caribbean, or rather, Dominican reality exceeds the imaginative power of Western fantasy. As Junior suggests, quote, at the end of The Return of the King, Sauron's evil was taken by a great wind and neatly blown away, with no lasting consequences to our heroes. But Trujillo was too powerful, too toxic a radiance to be dispelled so easily, unquote. Tolkien as an intertext then paves the way for this realization. The truth of Junior's statement, quote, you know exactly what kind of world we live in, it ain't no fucking Middle Earth, unquote, is twisted. Instead of suggesting that it apparently does, as it apparently does at first glance, that Oscar's predilection for the genres leads him away from the realities that he faces in the Dominican Republic, it does not actually lead him far enough. Oscar notes Junior has sought all his life to be, quote, the Dominican Tolkien, unquote. Caribbean reality precludes this. In the Dominican Republic, reality has already exceeded the possibilities of fantasy, and to become a writer of great fantasy would mean to become a chronicler of Dominican history. In this sense, and again metafictionally, it is Junior who has become the Dominican Tolkien by writing a book which reveals the marvelousness of the Dominican Republic. In its functions as a gateway to a better understanding of how, for lack of a better word, fantastic the Caribbean reality actually is, and as a spoiler against which this reality can be traced, the fantasy intertext of Tolkien thus plays a central role in the interpretation of Diaz's novel. Thank you very much.